Blog Talk Radio. The following program is brought to you by Firefly Willows, LIVE.
Hi, I'm Lisa Young.
Hi, I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life.
Welcome to A Shamanic Life with your host, John Carosella. Today's featured guest is Lisa Young. She talks with John about cultivating the new earth. It's here already. With creativity coach and shamanic artist Matt Wagner, John explores abundance in part 8 of The Vision Plan. Local activist advocate Emily Rose introduces us to Curtis Relaford. After more than 20 trips across the country to deliver food and supplies to the needy, Curtis is at it again, and you can help. In Spirit News and Song, we'll hear from Tina Malia and enjoy some of her beautiful music. We're not just doing shamanism, we're living it. Come along with us. It's A Shamanic Life.
Welcome, everybody. This is A Shamanic Life. I'm John Carosella, together here with Shamanic Life Online Community Founder, Karen Armstrong. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure, as always.
So here we are. It's solstice is coming up. Big changes are happening in the world, and big power is accumulating. So what do we need to know, Karen? Tell us.
Whoa! That's a big...
But you only have 2 minutes, because we've got a full show tonight. So.
Okay. What I'm here to tell you, and this is the biggest message that we need to get, is that we have to go back to the tribal way of living rather than the power and control of one person leading.
Yeah, of hierarchy, right?
Hierarchy. No more hierarchy. We all have gifts. We all have beautiful things to share. And so we reach out to each other rather than being hermits behind our computers, behind our desks, you know, hiding wherever we hide. We need to start working with each other.
Yeah, and it's so true that in tribal cultures, everybody had a role, and everybody would lead when their gift was called for, they were called to step in and lead.
Yes, and you know what? The whole tribe honored them and didn't butt in. They just let them do their thing, even if they fell on their face.
Their place. No, I think you're right, and I think this is part of what we're afraid of. And as we intensify our notion of competition and who's the best and all this kind of stuff, we forget that you don't have to be the best to be a gift.
Nope.
Yeah.
You just have to be the best at what you do.
You have to be the best at being you, which nobody else can do. So
right.
There you go.
Exactly.
Well, I think there's some very interesting conversations on the show. The rest of the show is pre-recorded, so I'll be here in the studio pushing this, but I really hope you all stay tuned and enjoy the show. Karen, thanks so much for being with us to kick this off, and we'll see you next time.
You're so welcome. Thanks, John.
All right, on with the show.
Bye-bye.
Would you like to share your shamanic life with our audience? We're always looking for featured guests who aren't just doing shamanism, but living it. If you've got stories to tell, let us know. Your stories can illuminate the path for others. If you're interested, contact us at facebook.com/shamanic life or send a message to Karen Armstrong, K-A-R-Y-N, at shamaniclife.com or John Carosella, jc@fireflywillows.com. We're ready to listen.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. With me for today's featured guest interview is Lisa Young. Lisa's life has been a journey about finding and fully experiencing our divine creator. That's God, universe, source, however you call it. She had a knowing, though faint at times, that we all were supposed to live deeply connected and in intimate oneness with creator, each other, and all things. As a youth, Lisa looked to religion, considered becoming a nun, tried many different forms of therapy, including a 12-step program, all in an intensive search to heal herself and live in greater experience of divinity in her life. Like any true search that begins externally, eventually Lisa ended up in deep excavation of her own consciousness, leading to a massive overhaul of her constructs of self, life, and the larger picture of the cosmos and creator. With the assistance of a few extraordinary teachers and her own very personal experiences with Creator, her spirit family, and other divine beings, she was able to remember and experience truth of who she is, why she is here, and the magnificent divine plan unfolding on this planet at this time. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And with that in mind, why are you here?
The million dollar question.
Yeah. So we've invited you to share on the program because, you know, in our personal conversations, I've noticed that you have a kind of a resonance or a vibration that has a kind of tranquility or serenity to it that is not passive. So it seems like it's high energy, but it's not anxious energy. Would you say that's true?
I think I would say that. I think that's maybe part of my purpose is to help hold a certain energy and frequency on the planet, help bring a certain energy here so that everyone can kind of find their own center.
Yeah.
In a way, you know, because I feel that what's going on the planet now is a lot of what I call entrainment. Rather than having to actually explain a lot of what's possible about how to live here, that actually if you become that energy, and you could call the energy of love or of harmony, if you become it and it resonates in all your cells, and then you sit next to somebody and you are that energy, like what you were describing, maybe how people could experience me as calm but clear, let's say, or calm but focused, then it makes it more available to the person who sits next to me.
Without having to do any work.
Right, without having to do any work. Mm. And I'm finding that more and more. So I really consciously began kind of my own healing work in about 2006 and also started learning energetic healing modalities in 2006. And then it seemed much more complex and tiring and difficult in a way to help people or even myself heal. It was like a more involved process and more tedious. And now I feel where we are on the planet, there's more support. And there's more lightness and ease and even letting go of our old stuff.
Mm. Well, so if you wouldn't mind a little dive back into your past, tell us what you were experiencing as a young person.
In terms of not feeling divinity?
Or your search. You know, in your introduction, we read how you considered becoming a nun.
There was a
big journey for you.
It definitely was. And, you know, it was, I think, when you asked me to write a bio, that I started to go back into that I haven't thought about for a long time. And saw almost with fresh eyes, you know how over time, when you're in such a detached place, it's like you can kind of hover over yourself or your life, and you can see with much greater understanding of what took place
in a
time in your life or relationship in your life or what have you. So in a way, it was kind of fascinating to do that and to see how, and I could go back and I could remember how even very, very young that there was a longing in me. It was like a longing and a looking for something that was missing. And I was born into a family that was very Catholic. I was in Catholic school and, you know, Catholic Sunday Mass.
Yeah.
And even, you know, my mom to this day is a churchgoer every day, every morning.
Every morning.
Rosary every night. So, you know, I was born into that, and I feel like I chose that I really wanted to come in and be a part of a religion.
Right.
To experience that. But even when I was young, it wasn't enough. You know, I can remember sitting in the church thinking that it's not here, you know, what I'm looking for, little pieces of it would come. But, you know, when I go back and look at it, the only time I actually felt some of what I was longing for, which I call, you know, feeling God or creator somewhat closer to me, was through the music. And you and I have talked about music and the role of music now. And it was only through the music that I would start to feel spirit and a little bit of joy. So, when I was young, I looked at the nuns that were my teachers, and I thought, well, I think they have some ticket to being closer to God.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to have something. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go that route because I'll do whatever it takes to find that again.
Right.
It was a distant memory of what I knew was possible. And so it kind of unfolded from there. I figured out that wasn't true, that actually when I kind of got closer to them, a lot of them seemed unhappy, not so happy. You know, it seemed that wasn't it. So I kind of kept searching and I left the church. And when I look back, I think it was just such an important journey of reading everything I could put my hands on and trying all different kinds of meditation, doing Buddhist stuff for a while, doing Hindu stuff for a while, you know, just in this quest of must be there.
How did those experiences of trying the different religious disciplines, how did they inform you? How did they affect you?
I think that in looking back, I found there was truth in all of them, but I felt there was more distortion than truth in each of them. So I knew that they weren't the full answer for me. You know, like I could very much resonate with Buddha and some of the Buddhist philosophy, but then some of it I didn't resonate with.
Right.
And then the Hindu, I to this day love kirtan and I love their music. And
mm-hmm.
I feel that depending on the musician, it can be very powerful and transformative for people. So there are aspects that come out of the Hindu religion that I deeply respect and I feel is a doorway. But none of it seemed to have the fullness and the truth of what some part of me knew. So I kind of kept going and realized I'm not going to find it in a religion. I don't think I'm going to find it in a book. This must be my own personal experience. And so just through meditations and then, like what you said in my bio, through a few teachers that really were able to open up some larger doors for me and firstly show me kind of how to clear my whole field so I was even open to those doors, because I feel like our field blocks us from the alignment.
Talk a little bit about that. The teachers helped you perceive after they helped you clear.
Yeah.
So
what
was that like?
Well, I think I knew early on that I had a lot of stuff on me that wasn't mine, that I was not operating really from who I was, and that I was living pretty limited. You know, I knew these things, but I didn't know a way out.
Yeah.
And I stumbled on the Four Winds School, you know, the Four Winds with Alberto Viodo.
Yeah.
Which I think is a fantastic shamanic program. And they teach the Incan energy medicine or mm-hmm. form of it.
Right.
And I remember the first class I took in Santa Barbara, they called it illuminating the light body or something along those lines. And they taught us how to begin to read the energy field and begin to see disturbances and balances in the energy field and then how to clear them out. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I've waited for this my entire life.
Oh yeah?
You know, it was like one of the best days of my life that all of a sudden I got, you can get rid of it. You know, you can find it and you can release it and you can transform it and you can make it into something beautiful rather, you know, the deepest wounds or whatever they are or the physical imbalances. So it was a shape-shifting weekend for me. And I remember driving back from Santa Barbara thinking everything is different because I know I can clear anything in my field that isn't mine, that's not truth, that's misaligned, that's out of balance. I drove home knowing that it's all possible. And so it was through that school and the Incan energy medicine, and this was from thousands of years ago, that the Incans knew this. You know, the Incans knew how to read the energy field and how to move out imbalances that were creating a dis-ease in someone.
So this is an area that continuously fascinates me. Even as I dig around in it, it's such a rich territory, and that is the territory of the disconnection from the capacities that we have that are our birthright as humans, and the way we actually exist in the world. And I'm poking on this a little bit because it seems like that it's a way more joyful and fulfilling way to live in connection. So why the heck are we not? Like, what is it that got bent? What circuit got disconnected that has drawn us into this weird place where we exist now, where we're so disconnected and caught up in really frivolous nonsense in how we live, when the bounty and abundance and the paradise that is this planet is still there waiting for us to
step into it.
So what's your sense of what that disconnection? Okay, I'll ask you, because why not? You're here. How did that happen?
Well, I think that's a whole topic in itself. And I feel that where we are today is actually in a complete realignment of what happened. And that paradise that you just said is there is more available to everyone on the planet than ever before. But it does take a belief and a decision to step into what I consider is just a flow that's available. You know, I call it the manipulation. I feel that hundreds of thousands of years ago, this is actually a planet, and it's very rare that it occurs in the history of all the multiverse. But it is a planet that was a little manipulated with for various reasons, that got a little kind of a slippery slope and got way out of alignment in every way. So out of alignment in terms of the experience on the planet, in terms of not just humans, but also animals, you know, everything kind of got out of alignment with the grid that protects the Earth, that is usually in absolute harmony, coherence with the galaxy and the universe. Everything, of course, created with perfection and with absolute coherence with each other all the way.
All part of the same song, harmonies of the
yes.
same song.
Of the whole universe, and everything fits absolutely perfectly inside each other. And so if you kind of, you know, you mess with that a little bit, you mess with the grid a little bit, then the experience inside that grid changes because all of our brains are connected to this grid. So if you start to mess with the grid, you mess with the brains, all of a sudden everyone is experiencing their reality in a completely different way,
right.
whether it's true or not. So,
right.
So what is happening, and a lot has already happened, is the grid is now back in alignment with the galaxy and its universe. It is in place. So now it's your choice.
Right. And my intuition tells me that, and I know this is a hopeful statement, but I also feel like it's true, is that when we passed through the winter solstice 2012,
mm-hmm.
that what happened was we went from a place where, from a way of being where exploitation and unsustainable behavior was easier than doing the sustainable, holy, sacred thing,
mm-hmm.
to a new landscape where doing it the old way is actually harder than doing
Absolutely.
It the good way.
Yeah.
And so our natural inclinations as lazy creatures, right? You know what I mean? It's like we want to do what's convenient, right? We're convenient.
I think we want to do what is akin to authentic and organic for us. I think if you get to the true, and I guess this gets to the question of, do you believe at our essence we are innately magnificent, or at our essence, are we maybe a little lacking or lazy or, right? I think it's a question
okay.
of who are we at
sure,
our essence?
Sure, you can, that's good pushback. So let me say it differently. As we are creatures of habit, right? We've been conditioned to behave in ways that are convenient. Right, we like convenience, especially in Western culture. We do what's convenient. We do what's put in front of us. And So in a sense, we do what feels easiest. And I postulate that what's easier now is living sustainably, that living in a way that is not sustainable actually is not working very well anymore. And it's really hard for most of us. I mean, just look at what our economy and culture has created for us. We are harvesting a way of life that's not very easy anymore. And, you know, when I think about how much easier it is to be nice to people than it is to be competitive with people, and how much more enjoyable and fulfilling that is, and the value that gets created through doing that, I just think that that's generally speaking going to become our new habit. And we have a choice to consciously cultivate that new style of being. And that's how the shift is going to happen quickly, because it's actually going to be easier to do it the new way than it is to do it the old way. Now, you challenged appropriately on whether we're magnificent beings or not.
At
our essence. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, let's talk about that.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
We'll be right back.
We hope you're enjoying today's program. You can find archives of A Shamanic Life and our other thoughtful and provocative programs at blogtalkradio.com/fireflywillowslive. Check out Convergence, John's monthly radio magazine where science and mysticism meet, the third Sunday of every month, or one of our other interesting shows and their interesting hosts, blogtalkradio.com/fireflywillowslive. Come join us.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And with me for our conversation today is Lisa Young. Lisa, before the break, I was saying something that wasn't particularly enlightened, and you challenged back about you said something about it depends on whether you think human beings are innately magnificent at their essence.
Yes.
And I want to know what you think about that and why.
Well, as you could probably guess, my experience of all beings, no matter who they are, is that if you get to their essence as they were created, they are magnificent. They can get confused and way off course and be acting way out of who they really are.
Yeah.
So it can make it difficult to maybe see that in someone or experience that in someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you go to pretty much, I think, most people's concept of God, of a God, or God, a divine creator, right? So
yeah.
He, she who created us. Who is, in my experience, omnipotent. So if you're going to create and you're omnipotent, so you have the ability to create a being, a species, you know, exactly as you want, and you are a omnipotent being that is of love. You are going to create a being of love and of goodness and of harmony at their essence, not one of lack and deficiency and inadequacy. But we have been taught, and I can point to some religions and some ideas like original sin, that we come in maybe a little tainted, mm-hmm. right? You know, if you really go into the whole concept of original sin, you have that at birth in that belief system, right? At birth, you come in with sin, which, you know, is some kind of something wrong, right? If there's mm-hmm. sin on your soul. And I think that in working with people over the years, and partly what I do when I work with people or groups, is I go into the deepest root of what is keeping them either in health or happiness or creating what they want in their life. And this that we're talking about, this belief that I am perhaps flawed at my core, is so prevalent in so many people that I've worked with. And when that gets healed And when that gets shifted into the remembrance of who they are, that is not flawed in any way, it's shape-shifting and life-changing for people. They're no longer basing their life and their experience of themselves on there's something wrong with me. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's intriguing. I can imagine how that might... I'm trying to imagine how that kind of revelation would... what that would shift in me. What's your experience in... what does that do for people?
Well, if you're operating from that belief system, which is, I call it a construct, because it's a big one. So if you're operating from that foundation, that who I am at my core is flawed, then what I find is someone will go through their whole life and find proof of that. So, and you know, if you have a belief strong enough, you will find proof to reinforce it. It's kind of the way we do it down here, right?
Yeah.
Which is why it's so important to watch your belief systems. And so you will pull in a partner who will reinforce that. I think there's probably something wrong with you. You may pull in a boss into your experience who's going to find things wrong with you. And the reason that I see that things get set up like that, that, for example, if I'm operating from that belief that I'm fundamentally flawed, and then I go through my life and I bring in family that repeats that and a boss that repeats that, the reason I'm doing that, the reason from my higher self I'm bringing in people to reflect it back to me, is only so I can see it, so I can see it, so I can see it, so I can finally one day go, wait a minute, what am I doing? Why am I thinking there's something so terribly wrong with me? So I can stop and change it and move back more into truth. So we keep bringing it up for ourselves, and we pull in people who match that belief for us, you know, in a brilliant, masterful orchestration in a way, until you, in whatever way it happens, and I see now sometimes people shifting it through music, you know, merging so much, getting into so much alignment, let's say, with the love that a song brings through, that they begin to just let that go. And they didn't do some huge 3-hour healing session, you know, or they didn't have to go to the jungle and, right, you know, and do ayahuasca and all that to heal it. And there's nothing wrong with any of those things. But my point just being that it is easier, you know, to let something like this one, you know, that we're talking about, that can be a core belief, just shift, and you begin to not only experience life differently, then you begin to attract in very different people, because you're no longer vibrating in this belief of being flawed. You're now vibrating in this belief of really trusting myself and believing in all that I am. And then you pull in bosses and partners and friends that reflect that new reality to you.
Yeah, and there's an unwinding of contracts that happens when you go through a change like that. I mean, if you've built an infrastructure around yourself based on one belief system, and then you go through a transition of that belief system to something else, then a whole bunch of things don't feel right anymore, but they're still there.
Right.
So you have to
process
them, adjust them, or release them, mm-hmm, so that you make room for something else. That's a challenging thing to do. And I suppose that can retard or cause you to reject that change.
The having the challenge of your environment
reacting
to your change.
Exactly.
Well, I think that there is timing as a big factor for everyone. I think everyone is on their own divine timing and their own unfolding of how they want to awaken and remember who they are. And I have learned in my own journey to be very detached with everyone's timing. But I do also feel that in my own personal experiences, as I have shifted out and changed some of these constructs of myself. And I can look back and see it is true that there were reverberations in my life, and that it did result in some significant changes in my life, but they were all changes that were needed and that were really no longer in alignment with who I was. So the shifting the core belief kind of assisted me in aligning these other parts of my life, whether it was I got to quit this job, you know,
right.
And it's hard and I don't know what I'm gonna do for money, but I'm going to move into this new trust in myself to create the reality that I desire. And so it makes it more solid when you allow those other things to shift too. It like reinforces the new core belief. Like, okay.
So you have to really have the new core belief locked in.
Well, I think that it becomes locked in as you live and trust it more and more. And you know, there's usually not just one belief, right?
Oh,
so
yeah,
you have
right.
the one core, and that one core is going to go out in 10 directions. And so then I think a little bit what you're describing too, you change the core and then you get up and you go through your day, and then it's kind of highlighted another one now. Because
right,
as you shift
right,
that one,
right.
then there's this one. So a lot of this too, I think what we're talking about is deciding to live very consciously. And say, okay, I'm feeling much better, but now I'm in a little bit of fear about something else over here, you know? And so I find it's really living consciously, and it's being in this process of allowing yourself to go at your own timing, you know, and in a comfortable way as much as possible.
So I was just going to ask about that. Do you sense, is it your experience that there's a discipline involved with this, or is it just a relaxed, organic process that doesn't require an intense discipline to make happen?
I no longer think it takes intense discipline anymore, but I do believe it takes decision and intent and some focus and then an allowing and a surrender. So those would be more the words I think I would use rather than work or hard or discipline. Because in my experience now, it is more putting focus, and this has changed in the last 2 years. So prior to probably 2012, actually, when I would work with people or groups, the focus was more on, okay, let's try to pinpoint the issue and the problem, and let's really try to change it. Then starting in 2012, and this is accelerated this year, the focus is much more, well, what do you want? How do you want to feel? What do you want to experience? And putting all the focus, all the energy into creating that, you know, whether you want to call it law of attraction, and saying, this is how I want to feel about myself now, you know, and then actually holding that new intent and decision, and that actually dissolving some of the old stuff rather than all the focus on what's wrong.
Well, that sure feels a lot. It feels like the goddess as opposed to the god. It feels like divine feminine. It feels like whereas the stern father, nurturing mother models, right? Where when you're focused on what's broken, it's an education, and in that process of educating yourself, your process of observing and discerning, you're educating yourself about the nature of who you are. What you're describing is allowing yourself to creating room to imagine and define who you want to be, what you want to cultivate, what you want to nurture, and just give that more energy and allow that to be the thing that gets fed by your spirit, and so it blooms by itself.
Exactly.
Why didn't we know about this before?
Well, it is much easier now. It's kind of, I think, what we were saying in the beginning. There's actually more support in terms of energetic support, in terms of alignment on the planet that make it easier to actually, what I call align, you know, align with the universe, align with source, and therefore align back with who we really are. There's just a lot more here that is supporting us doing that. So therefore it takes less effort. You know, we don't have to focus on all these lower thoughts and energies and beliefs and, you know, and pull them all out one by one anymore. Because we're living on a new earth now, you know, we're in many ways. And I think you and I have mentioned this once before, talked about the fact that there's kind of two earths here at the same time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about, okay. Let's talk about that after another short break.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is John Carosella, your host for A Shamanic Life. I hope you're enjoying the show. I love creating this show and sharing our guests with you. If you'd like to support the show, your contributions in any amount are gratefully received. If you'd like to help, send your contribution via PayPal to asl@fireflywillows.com. That's asl@fireflywillows.com. Sincerely, and with love and light, I thank you.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And I'm here talking with Lisa Young. And Lisa, before the break, you talked about we're living in a new earth. And then right before the break, you said there's two earths here. And let's talk about, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that we are at an extremely unique, fascinating time in the history of the planet and actually in the history of the universe. I think this is an extremely extraordinary situation on this planet that, like we mentioned earlier, doesn't occur very often, where a planet and the beings that live on the planet experience the range of frequencies that occur on this planet. In other words, you know, all the way to greed and competition and manipulation, envy, you know, these are such low frequencies for created beings to go to. And in that, you know, it has also been an opportunity for many of the spirits that have chose to come here in a body. It's in a weird way an opportunity that you get to experience the full possibility, the full spectrum of human emotion and human experiences. So even though some of them can not be that enjoyable at the time, it expands your consciousness to be able to have this experience of this wealth of all human emotion and experience. But what I feel has happened is we're at a place in time and history where we have said collectively no more. We no longer, as a collective, want to experience war. We no longer, as a collective, want to be any part of destroying this planet. You know, we no more want to live in separation from each other and from the rest of the universe and creator. It's almost like there has been a collective clarion call of we are done with this old way of living on a planet. And it has summoned a lot of help. It has summoned a lot of help from the universe and even beyond. So lots of beings are here. What I see and I call is a divine plan in order here to assist in realigning the planet with the universe, with source, so that the frequencies, like you said earlier, the dominant energies here, which are now different, so the dominant energies on this planet become the same as the energies if we were all in spirit form and back at source with creator, that the dominant frequencies available to each of us are love and truth and beauty and goodness, and that we are living in this oneness and harmony. But right now, at this juncture, of course, we can turn on the news or open a newspaper and say, not sure we're there yet, right? Not sure we're all swimming in love and truth, beauty and goodness yet. But what I, my personal experience that I feel this is fascinating because it is side by side though. So depending on where you focus, depending on where you choose to live, and I don't mean geographically, I mean in terms of where I'm going to put my energies and my focus.
Right.
There is a new consciousness on the planet, and all these frequencies of source that we all do know somewhere in the core of our being are here, and they're in mass here. And side by side, there is still a fairly intense old consciousness. And in some places, the old consciousness is hanging on for dear life.
Oh, in most places, it's hanging on for dear life.
And we can go to parts of the world and see where it's very strongly hanging on.
Yeah.
So side by side. So here we are. Many of us said, oh God, I want to come to that planet Earth and I want to be there at this time because I can see it's going to be quite an experience to be in a body on that planet as it is completely shifting into a new consciousness, into a new reality. What an extraordinary experience. So I feel many of us said, sign me up, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we get down here and we forget that.
You know, and I also, you know, this, the way you describe this now, it leads me to this very interesting place where, you know, the population spiked just like went hockey stick on us as we entered into this period that we're in now. There's 7 billion humans.
Mm.
And I thought, I was just thinking as you were talking about this, that we all signed up for this a whole bunch of us signed up. It's almost like the last opportunity to get in on this entire range of human experience, including the suffering part.
Right, exactly.
Because look at how many of us are suffering.
Right.
Right? Why did you sign up for this? Well, maybe because this is the last opportunity for a long time to get in, to get your consciousness expanded in that way. Because
absolutely.
Because the shift is going to happen and that's not going to be available here anymore.
Right. And I think,
That would be a crazy plan, but it fits the data.
Well, and the plan is very complex. So, I mean, that's part of it. And then I also feel, you know, that there's 7 billion, like you said, right, beings here, but they're all very, very different. And then I think there's some beings here that are not even from this universe that were part of the summons to help this planet.
Yeah.
There's some very extraordinary beings on the planet right now that are helping to anchor these higher consciousness and higher frequencies and teach them for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also amazing to be alive when that's all occurring. So there's not, you know, and we can look back in history and say, well, yes, you know, we had a Buddha come and we had Christ come and Muhammad, you know, and it seems like there's one every 500 years, you know, that we can look to. But right now there's a whole group. I mean, there's quite a few from all over and different kinds of beings. So very unique, very extraordinary. And so my perspective of it is that it's so key to keep that higher understanding of what's unfolding here and to keep my focus and energy on the new earth and the new consciousness. And by doing it, that's what I feed. That's what I share. That's what those that are around me can also help remember. And then we thereby grow it. We thereby anchor it through our own selves.
By being the change.
By being it, yes.
Yeah, be the change, right? It's really interesting. There's two, and one is being born and one is dying.
Right.
And the one that's dying has a very, very deeply rooted fear of death.
Absolutely.
Which is why it's fighting so hard not to die. Not that things don't fight hard not to die, because they do. But I mean, there's a panic. It seems to me like there's a panic, and you know, it is a struggle because on the one hand you want to get your hands in there and do the work to fix what's broken, because you see the immediate consequences of the suffering that is associated with that brokenness. But it's so broken that, you know, the alternative is to just let it be broken and take yourself and your energy and invest it in creating something new. And I think a lot of us who are trying to be fully present to what's happening are torn by where do you put yourself? I mean, do you go into activism to try to fix something, or do you sort of withdraw from that whole conflagration and invest yourself in creating something different?
Yes, I think that's a great point. And in my experience, the way you become the most powerful agent of change is first really focusing completely on yourself. So it, you know, goes against the whole idea of put yourself last and help others. But the more you can come home to yourself and align your entire being with a source of love and truth and beauty and goodness and become that and allow anything in you that is not that to shift. And that can take some time. And that can be a journey and take a lot of love and self-love. But to me, there's not a more important piece of work than that, whether it takes you a year or 20 years. Because to be the most powerful activist in the world, it's going to come from you vibrating the same frequency that Jesus walked the planet with. And the way you become that 1,000 hertz frequency is you have nothing in your field but your pure essence of pure divinity and source. And you vibrate in that everywhere you go. And then being an activist means I'm going to sit in the DMV. And my intent is to be this being and conduit of love. And I don't even have to talk to anybody. But I am going to so be this love as I sit in this DMV that I'm just going to trust that anyone that is in any way open is going to feel it and train to it, experience it. And that is so much more powerful overall in terms of the amount, the magnitude of your impact.
That's so hard.
Picketing.
That's so hard for the action-oriented, active principle demeanor in our culture to accept. I know it's really hard for me. Just hearing you say that, I'm like, I would have to trust so much in...
who you are.
I wasn't even going to say that. I was going to say in the ability and the presence, the immediate presence of the divine to work through me.
Yes.
Because it seems so conscientiously passive. And I mean that not in a demeaning way, but it's like, don't have an agenda other than love and truth.
Right, right.
And that's like, I often wrestle with this, like, I have all these tools. I have all these talents. I have all these gifts. I have all these connections and resources that put me in this place with all these knobs to turn and dials and levers to flip. If I just sit and radiate love, what am I doing with all these tools?
But I don't think this is like an example of one possibility, right? And the point was just coming from the foundation from which you're acting from. So I'm a big believer in create, you know, that I feel that we are here to also be creators and that we all have different unique expressions to express, whether, you know, it's through painting or through talking or interviewing, whatever it is. And that it's part of why we're here is to express ourselves. But the more that we come from this place of knowing ourselves, I am love and I am truth. Like when you are resonating in that, and then from that core you go out and you might be giving talks to thousands of people around the world, right? Or, you know, you may be composing a piano concerto. the place that you are creating from and the impact of that creation shifts dramatically because your foundation has shifted dramatically and you therefore can hold and reflect so much truth or so much love.
Yeah.
That you really impact upon your presence.
So any works that you do are so much more potent because they are aligned with and grounded in that primal, that foundational characteristic, which is love and truth.
Right.
So how could they not be way better than something
right.
else?
Right. And you know, I call it the awakening process, right? So the more we drop in and allow ourselves, because I really now more and more feel it's about allowing ourselves. It's not really the work anymore. We move through kind of our fear and resistance and drop in more and say, all right, you know what? I am ready to learn more about who I am, to really know more of who I am and what I'm bringing in this lifetime. And
gosh, when I'm getting so excited just hearing you say that. Like, I'm excited about doing that myself.
It's cool. I think everybody should do it. And because you set wheels into motion. When you sit there and you say, I am ready, you know, and you know it's not about work and it's not even really about clearing a ton anymore. It's about, no, I'm ready and I'm open to assistance now to allowing myself to drop in and recognize who I am and what I'm here to do so that I can be a larger embodiment of that. Mm. So I can allow myself to be the fullest expression of who I am here. And you just set that intent and you allow yourself to be guided as to how that's going to move through you and come to you. And to me, that's the most exciting place to get to. And then you allow that. And then in everything you do, you notice that, wow, I'm even more at home in myself. I'm even more trusting because I'm allowing this much larger expression of me because I'm allowing myself to be directly connected in to source. And I'm going to allow myself to just be that channel. So your ego's out of the way because now it's not just the little you down here on the earth trying to run around and figure anything out. You're like, I'm a channel of this energy. And in this life, wow, you know what? I said that I was going to bring a lot of truth and I was going to help break things down for people so that they could get it. And so I'm going to be that biggest embodiment of truth that it can be. And you know, and you just keep surrendering to it more and more and more until you start to realize you're this massive channel of truth right from source.
Bound to feel pretty good.
Yeah. And then whatever you want to do, right? Then whatever you want to do. And it might not be your way to sit in DMV and channel love. You know, that might not be you at all. It might be like, oh my God, you know, you could feel it's not you.
Right.
And you're jumping out of your skin.
Right.
But then you find what is you. Like, I think you found with this, you know, it's so you. It's you being you.
Well, so we're almost out of time.
Okay.
Is there anything that you would like, any last thing you'd like to share with the listeners?
I think that just what we were talking about, that the knowing and the trusting that is available now, that if you choose, you can live more and more and more on this new earth and continue every day to step in more and more to living on this new earth and living in this new consciousness where you will find you are more and more supported.
Mm.
So it's just a suggestion that if you want, you can set that intent to make that your reality more and more every day. And I truly believe it will become your reality.
And that gives us, that gives me a lot of hope that the net result of that is the blossoming of the garden, the blooming of the garden.
Yes.
So, Lisa, thank you. If folks want to get to know you or your work a little bit better, how shall we direct them?
You can email me if you'd like. My email is my name, Lisa Young, and that's Y-O-U-N-G, the number 33@gmail.com.
So LisaYoung33@gmail.com.
I don't have a website at the moment. I'll have one up in the fall.
But you're doing some music and meditation work.
Yes. So I'm at Peace Bank Yoga in Redwood City on some Fridays. And I'll be there again. The next time I'm there will be in September. And that's on their website.
Cool.
On Friday nights at 6:30.
Very good. All right, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoyed our conversation, learned a lot.
Thank you. I did too.
All right, and we'll be right back.
At Firefly Willows, LIVE, we're working hard to be your trusted source for fun, enlightening, and heart-centered information and community. And we're passionate about the art of transformative media, the new leading edge of communication in our highly connected, media-rich world. If you're passionate about facilitating change and you have gifts or ideas you'd like to share, come join us. Host a show or be a guest or connect us to an amazing speaker or teacher whose message is too good to miss. There's always room for courageous, knowledgeable change makers, inspired artists, and new ideas. Let us know you're interested. Send an email to info@fireflywillows.com. We're Firefly Willows, LIVE. Helping you find and shine your inner light.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And with me for part, what part are we on? We're on part eight.
That's
of the Vision
right.
Plan is visionary artist, creativity coach, and shamanic practitioner, Annette Wagner. Annette, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be back.
And this week, we're going to talk about abundance. Just a quick recap. We have, we start with
our passion and purpose in the world.
Right.
We ask, what are we called to do in the world? And then we have a conversation about what your legend is.
Right.
Then we kind of step up higher and we say, well, what is the big dream that holds all of this?
Right.
That really is why I wake up in the morning and, you know, why I have this passion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move into who are our beloveds?
Right.
Who do we serve in the world? Who are the people that we're doing this work for? Then we flip the whole thing over to the second four panels and we ask what our offerings are.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can think of this as like a menu.
Right.
What's the menu of what I'm doing out in the world? And then sharing is how are we going to share what we do.
Right.
And then we step into abundance.
Okay, so here we are at abundance. What's the plan here?
Abundance and prosperity is a topic that, especially when you're doing spiritual work and asking to be sustained by it, is one that people tend to have this kind of interesting resistance or guilt or funny sets of logic about.
Mm.
And so it's one in which we ease into them. We don't use typical words. Like one of the words, I just had the opportunity to spend the weekend with my teacher, Shiloh Sophia McLeod, and we were talking about using the word abundance or prosperity, and we actually decided to use the word livelihood.
Which is actually a gear shift for me between abundance and livelihood. They're very different.
Well, they are and they aren't. It depends on what the focus of your business plan is. So if the focus of your business plan
is vision plan. Yeah, you see, you went to livelihood and then you went to business plan. I'm like, this is very suspicious.
That was a good catch. I didn't hear myself do that. So there's this question about prosperity and abundance, and you have to have a relationship with it where you are willing to give and receive. And a lot of people who are going out in the world and serving are afraid to ask for what they're worth. There's this also this relationship between, am I worthy? Am I deserving?
And it's
interesting because it comes back to this thing about, but if you don't take care of yourself and meet your needs, you are not going to be out there serving people.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a fundamental harmonic for me now to realize that, you know, sustainability is essential. If you really want to pursue your... If you want to be mm-hmm. the gift that you think you want to be, you have to figure out a way to do it sustainably, or you're not going to be able to be that gift.
Right, and also to really truly ask for what you need. I mean, if what you need is to be able to travel twice a year because that's how you keep your sanity, you need to ask for what you need. You need to say, and I need enough abundance or prosperity in my life that I'm not going to freak out about money every month. I want to know my bills are going to get paid. I want to know I can send my kid to college. Whatever it is that, you know, gives you that freaking out, you want to ask and not be afraid to ask for that. And that's hard.
All right, so we have our panel, and how do you usually instruct people here around this?
One of the things that I ask them to really think about, so there's symbol, and then there's what they actually put on it. So let's start with symbol. Symbol-wise, I usually suggest to people that it includes something that is filled up and overflowing.
Mm-hmm.
And flowing is important with things like abundance and prosperity because you want it to flow in your life. And money is literally energy, and it flows in and it flows out. It's just energy. So it's accessing that sense of flow and that you have so much of it that it overflows in your life. So typically we do, we might do bowls. Like one of the ones I have in front of me here has a series of bowls on it. Another one has something that looks sort of like a chalice. But both of them have, all of these have liquid inside of them, and the liquid pours out. And I love to, of course, paint gold all over it because I feel a little extra help doesn't hurt. So that's one piece of it, is to just really connect with a symbol that reflects overflowing prosperity and abundance and wealth in your life.
And flowing.
Flowing, yes,
right.
That it is flowing.
Both.
It is active. It is moving. It is flowing through your life. And some people actually take the flow out of whatever it is, and then they'll paint it onto all the other panels and connect it into their offerings, their connections, their sharing. They'll just paint it all the way across. And I love that idea, too.
Mm, I like that idea, too.
So that's the symbolic part of it. And then in terms of what you actually put on the panel, this really correlates back to what your purpose is, what your offerings, and what your sharing is. You said, this is my purpose and calling in the world. Here's the things I'm willing to go out and offer in the world. Okay, this is what I need back. And it could literally be, I need to make $6,000 a month.
Right.
It could be, I want to be paid this much an hour. It could be, I want to make 30% of my income from my art and 40% from something else.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be, I am worthy and deserving, and I am taken care of and supported in all ways. That's one reason why the names on this panel sometimes change between abundance or prosperity or sometimes livelihood, is it's where's the wire, you know, the thread that's hot that you can tug on connect into on this page.
And I'm trying to think through here, like, abundance. You know, when I say the word abundance, I think of the Italian word abbondanza, which usually is a big, like, three or four picnic tables strung together outside, covered with tablecloths, and the extended family is sitting down for some big old meal.
And floated with food and wine and chatter.
Yeah, right. It's, you know, and it's beautiful outside, and there's a breeze, and there's food everywhere, and there's love all around, and there's play, and there's laughter, and there's music. And it's like, you know, that's abundance to me. And I'm just wondering, you know, like, what is that?
See, when I hear you say that, I hear a lot about community and support and love. And depending on, you know, what you've done your vision plan on,
yeah,
that may be the abundance that you're asking for, is to have that in a way what you're describing is, this is a set of people that are sitting around these picnic tables and chatting, eating, where the connections between all of you are present. There's this reciprocal energy flowing between everyone.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's very present and moving.
And there's material support flowing through those connections too. You know, it's like people bring food, people bring wine, people bring fruit, or the host is supplying a whole bunch of this, but it's all somehow it's all manifesting.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm creating a tally of you know, like any of the other things that you've mentioned, like mm-hmm. like how much to charge for a workshop or how much, what percent of my income comes from. It's not even income related, really. So I still have there's a thing here about this panel. You know, we talk about, I mean, there's obvious ways to think about abundance. There's, like you said, there's asking for the material things that you need.
Mm-hmm.
But there's resistance to asking for those material things, I think in part because if you're really talking to God here, let's say,
mm-hmm.
all right, you're going to ask God for $150 a session to get paid $150 a session? That, I mean, it seems like there's something that is, I don't know, it seems small
so,
to ask for that kind of thing.
It is and it isn't. So let's take it apart and see what we find.
Yeah, let's take it apart.
So the one thread that comes in here and confuses us, especially given, you know, I'm white woman in American culture, right, is we live in a culture that is totally about consuming and materialism. So we get this message immediately when we do something like this, that it's not that if we ask for something like a car or $150 per session, that we're just falling right back into materialism.
Right.
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 And so my response to that thread is to say, excuse me, look at the rest of your vision plan. If you're really signing up to do your work in the world and you really believe in it passionately and you're really willing to do the offerings. And when I see people create these things, they're putting down things that are pretty amazing that they're going to go out there and do.
Right.
So my response to that is, it's perfectly okay to ask for $150 a session. It's completely okay to ask for a car if that's what you need to do your work, because you're doing your work. And you need to step out of that thing.
Well, okay. So there's two things here. One is, if you ask God for that, it seems like it seems to me like if I were to ask God for something that specific and concrete, it would presume that I am so clear about all of this stuff that I can be that specific in what I ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is that really what I need? Does that really represent the magic of abundance to me?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that just something that I'm throwing out there because I don't really know how to do it any other way? Right. I don't know how to do this without a car. I don't know how to do this without a roof over my head. I don't know how to do this without getting paid for my sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that doesn't mean that that's. Is that really what abundance is, or is abundance really, I am free enough to do my work?
The thread underlying both of those things is trust.
Ah, okay. So now we're getting there. Okay. Now we're getting there. Okay. So what abundance really means is that perhaps, I mean, I like this. That's trust. I can trust that my needs will be tended to as I do my work.
Yes. And it once again goes back to engaging. You're basically saying you're going to go out and do this work in the world. I'm admitting, I'm writing down, and I'm making visible to the entire world my promise about what my passion purpose is in the world. And I'm saying, these are my beloveds, and this is how I'm going to do my work. And I am asking for you to give me these things. And underlying all of that is that a trust that says the Spirit is going to take care of you to do your work. Now, what happens in this is, you do the best job you can when you write your vision plan. You're doing your best job at that time, at that moment, you know, right here, right now. And it may not be what you need to get this work done. In fact, the work that you wrote down that you said you're going to do may not actually be what you end up doing.
Right.
But the fact that you have put your effort into it and you've made the best possible effort to put this down, Spirit recognizes that. And,
right.
And it just... there's a level of trust that happens, and there's a letting go that we have to have of the fears around money, and that's the really hard stuff.
So I think that's, I guess, where I would want to bring my consciousness and my spirit and my vibe, if you will, in working on the abundance panel, is alleviating Now, something needs to be, we need to make something concrete, mm-hmm. right? So there is that, right? But it is about saying, in the following conditions, if I am experiencing the following conditions, mm-hmm. then I am free to do my work,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's interesting because that abundanza picture that mm-hmm. I talked about would say to me, I have enough. If I can be the host of that party every Sunday or, you know, whatever,
right?
That if I can host that community,
mm-hmm.
then I have enough to do my work.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have the environment around me, because clearly all those people are coming.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And they're all engaged, and I have enough means to throw the party.
Yeah.
That is interesting. So this trust thing, so you can write down specifics.
Oh, absolutely.
But they don't. But the thing, I guess, the thing about it is, they're not. You're not fixed on them. It's just one. It's your best guess on how you can trust that you'll be able to do your work.
Mm-hmm.
That you'll be taken care of enough to be able to do your work.
Well, yes. Trust underlies, in fact, the whole vision plan, if you think about it.
Oh, maybe this just happens to be an area where I have the least amount of trust.
Well, abundance brings up, abundance, trust is big on this one because abundance brings up fears. I'm not going to have enough money for my child to be able to live with me.
Hmm.
I'm not going to have enough money to pay my rent every month. I'm going to have to get food stamps because I can't feed myself or my children. There is big stuff, or I'm going to be seen as a failure in my family because I'm not making enough money. And that's that fear. Part of facing abundance and being in connection with it and asking for what you want is also having a place where you can say, I'm going to let go of the fears that I'm going to be a failure to my family, or I'm not going to have enough money to pay my rent or to feed my kid, or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, it's embracing the fears too. And that's where trust comes in big time on this one. So in a funny way, I also see this as a negotiation with spirit, because I'm putting my heart into this thing. I'm saying, here's all the stuff that I'm going to go do. Okay, pony up, spirit. You want me to go do this?
Right.
You damn well better catch my back.
Right. Well, I think that's, yeah. And
there's that give and take again.
It really is. It really does feel like spirit has my back. That enough abundance will come so that I can responsibly do my work in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Okay, Annette. Thanks very much. If folks want to get to know you and your work a little bit better, where do we send them?
You send them to AnnetteWagnerArt.com.
All right. And you'll be back next time with?
I'll be back next time with the final panel, which is Connections.
Great. All right. Annette, thanks so much for joining us on the show. And we'll be right back.
Do you have a workshop, protocol, or modality that you'd like to explore with our audience? Come and join us on the air. Share why you love it, how it helps us shine, and empowers us to live more fully. Share your inspiration. You never know who might be listening and whose lives you'll touch. Contact John Carosella on Facebook or by email at jc@fireflywillows.com for details.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life, and we are on location with local activist advocate Emily Rose and Curtis Relford.
Hi, John. I'm here to bring to the attention of everybody this wonderful human being who I have sitting next to me named Curtis, and he has started a project called the Follow Your Heart Action Network. So, Curtis, what is it that you're doing?
It's simple what I'm doing. Collecting donated items, food, clothes, hammers, nails, paint, building material to take to people who are less fortunate than what I see around here. What I'm doing now developed from me taking a trip down to New Orleans in 2005 when that hurricane hit. I was born and raised over there, and I didn't know it was going to lead into a charitable organization. And the first trip was just going to be one trip, and that was it. But I did that trip, got back to Santa Cruz, and I had 8 tons of food and clothes and toiletries all in my driveway, 35-foot RV in the driveway, and the folks telling me to just take it to New Orleans and do what you want with it. And I said, man, I know who could use that. And it was just adrenaline going. And we did 3 trips across country. That's main 10 men. And we delivered this stuff. I got back, and I said, you know what? After that third trip, after 3 years of it, then I started looking at how it was paying off by the guys that went with me. I didn't know they had a drug problem. I didn't know he was in a gang. The gangbanger's in junior college now, doing good, and he's loving it. The drug addicts are clean and sober for 2 years now, and they, you know, feeling life. And the men, these grown men, big, burly, tattoos all over them, come back to me. They had cleaned up. They had shaved and cut their hair and just groomed. Man, I got my family back. I got my kids back, holding down a job for the last 2 years, and tears in their eyes, tears of joy. So that's what got it started. And I would keep saying about the adrenaline, because I found a purpose in life, a purpose of just serving the poorest of the poor. And I'm going to the Navajo Hopi reservation. I didn't ask for that. I didn't even plan that. I went to the Navajo reservation on the strength of, at the gas station, sitting over there by myself, eating a sandwich. Here come these 2 little boys, and they ask me for spare change. I give them spare change and look at their shoes. So, man, they need shoes, and I got a case of shoes on that truck. It's 129 degrees. I got on a flannel shirt, just overalls, a hat, and I'm up on top of this truck, I mean, just sweating, looking for these shoes. I give them the shoes, and they leave, and their dad came back. Their dad needed jeans. So I have get back up there trying to look for these jeans to give to him. Now we got all these boxes on the Chevron station, spread it all out, looking like Stanford and Son. The store owner run out there, you can't do that out of here. Get this stuff up and out of here. And he just ran us off the parking lot. And the native man, come on, take it to my house. We could do it over here. And I followed them up there, this long, red, dusty road. And when we got there, man, where are we? He said, oh, this is the Navajo reservation. And he showed me around, and I started looking at the water supply, and it was all red-looking mud, and the houses, I mean, the places was like that adobe stuff. And I said, man, I got some material, building material, you think the people can use it? And we collaborated on what they needed. And, you know, I went and gathered that stuff up. It took me a year, but I gathered it all up, and I took that back to them. Then I came back to Santa Cruz, and I gathered up more stuff. And I was headed back over there looking for them, and I got lost on the Hopi reservation. I ran out of road. And then the very first family that I met, y'all, took me in, telling me, you can shower here, park your truck and trailer here. And the next day, they took me to all these different villages, dropping off food and canned goods and clothes and nails and hammers. And the joy from that, that's where I get paid at. It ain't about money. That's where I got paid at, looking at them people's faces. And they were just very present with me, looking at their faces with joy.
And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you how I first met Curtis. I believe it was probably around a year ago, maybe even a little bit longer. And at that time, I was working downtown Santa Cruz at Pete's Coffee, and I was walking down the street. And here I see a big van, and attached to the van are these trailers with
truck and trailer.
Would be what it would be called. It's a truck and trailer, and a big wooden board that's put on the trailer, and it says peace. And there's pictures of Mother Teresa and Martin Luther King Jr. and
Gandhi,
and all these beautiful activists. You know, and it was absolutely incredible. And here comes Curtis, this man in overalls and a flannel shirt, and he's got his work boots on and big smile and just the image of light and love. And we started talking, and he just spoke the truth. I'm doing this. I just got back from here. I'm collecting these clothes for these people. He is the face and the heart and the energy and spirit of what activism is.
You know, you say all this, all I'm going on is what my heart is speaking. Yeah. I'm just following my heart. I didn't know it was activist. I didn't know it was all the what people put the label on it. Because my day job is landscape, doing tree work, and all day, every day. And I've been doing that for 20 years. I'm just gung-ho at doing that. But this took over my life. It's such a noble cause. And it's everything that I want to do. I love doing. I love driving. I love the people. I love fundraising. I love the energy that this peace draws to me. There's more good people out there than there is bad. Good people out there just saying, no, keep doing what you're doing. I love what you're doing. And that's what I want to be around. I had to turn my life around. I got 27 years clean and sober. I done did a lot of work around this community, just putting together fundraisers for churches and putting together fundraisers for organizations just to see. I mean, out of just doing it, out of just putting it together and doing it, not saying that I'm doing this for justice or brand. It's just me was about bringing people together. And let's say, hey, man, let's get rid of racism and prejudice and bigotry. Let's bring love to the table, love and compassion and caring and sharing for each other. And that's where, and it was a little bitty peep. It was just a little bitty thing, a little bit of light in my head just jumping up saying this stuff. And now it's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's huge. I'm telling you, I feel it. And I was driving across that reservation, and I saw where I recognized that compassion at. I was driving down the freeway. There was a man, a woman, and his two kids on the other side of the freeway walking towards me. And I saw that, and it was 100 and some degrees over there. And, you know, something bubbled up inside of me, brought tears in my eyes. And I said, you know what? Them people need a ride. I got time. I went down that ravine like the cops do and come back up, and I came back and picked those folks up. And I got them in the truck, and I took them where they had to go. And that's when I saw, well, that's compassion, Kurt. And I'm starting recognizing this stuff. I'm not an educated person. I'm not all of that. But I know that I have a big heart, and I'm about love and caring. I don't, you know, it brings tears to my eyes, some of these places that I go to and talk and speak in front of people. And I'm always, you know, like the third or last or behind somebody have very eloquent speaking and eloquent words. And I look at that and I get scared. But you know what? By the time I get up there, I shake all of that off and I look at everybody through God's eyes. I just look at them like, you know, they're just human. I gave up everything to go and do this work. I was going through a divorce, and I had these ups and downs and dips. And when I jumped out there and started doing this service work, I was smooth sailing. There was no more ups and downs. And I said, you know what? This is my purpose in life. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't need all that stuff that I thought I wanted before. The nice car, the nice house, and, you know, and that's where I'm at now. I mean, that's since 2005, man. I'd have made 19 trips to New Orleans and 4 trips over to this the Navajo Hopi Reservation, and I didn't ask for none of this. All of this was just appeared. Like you say, when you put the energy out of what you're doing, it really, I'm seeing it now. It really do come back. Long as I'm thinking positive, y'all, I'm putting it out there, whoever got abundance out there, just to share a little bit with us unfortunate. And there are some people out there in America that's hungry. And I don't think that's right, being this the richest place on the earth. We're the richest place on earth. but we rather spend money on war and weapons. I don't understand. But in order to do what I'm doing, it's huge, it's big, and I'm asking for help. Go with me to help me do it. It don't have to be money. It's just you calling me. My number is 831-246-4240, and you can call me 24/7, 831-246-4240. And, you know, I'm just putting it out there and hoping that somebody can feel where I'm coming from and feel what I'm talking about.
So when you go, what are some of the things that you're going to need to collect? And how many people do you think you're going? What do you need to go? Do you need more trucks? Do you need people? Do you need bodies? Do you need food? What can we do to help you achieve this?
I just rented a big Penske 26-footer. I'm not asking for much. If I could just get a big truck like that full of goods, goods as in canned goods, warm clothing. They need warm clothing. These flutes that goes on fireplaces. Fireplaces, anything that's warm, because the winters are notorious over there, and any type of roofing material or any kind of connections with any organization that you all have that could donate this material, and I would come get it and pick it up to take it over there. And I would recommend 10 or 15 people going with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how much money do you need to raise? And by when? When are you leaving?
August 29th. And I'm just asked just to go over there and back $5,000.
Yeah?
Just $5,000. I'm not asking for food. I'm just asking for gas money and some money to buy a few materials over there when we get there. That's not asking for much.
No. And we have a flyer here that I'm looking at with a picture of Curtis's beautiful face and a lovely woman.
The Hopi. And she's a Hopi. Elderly. That lady's 100 years old. And she's still living in the area where there's no electric, no water. They call it the Wapi side. It's up in the First Mesa.
And this says, follow your heart, action network. Join us on a journey of kindness to the Navajo and Hopi reservations, leaving August 29, 2013. Items needed, such as infant and children's clothing and shoes, adult sweaters, jackets, beanie caps, men and women's jeans, new socks, underwear, and toiletries, building materials, rice, beans, and canned goods, or cash donations. And people, I'm telling you that this is so achievable if everyone comes in together. And, you know, people often will have this reasoning, well, I'm so consumed in my life and I would love to help. But others may be like, you know, I want to help and I don't know where my money's going to. And I'm telling you, this is a local activist. And when I say activist, I'm saying an activist as someone who brings attention to social change. And that's exactly what Curtis is doing. And you can do it through him and help and come and join. And we can all do this together. And you can check him out on his website at www.followyourheartactionnetwork.com or email him at Relaford1987@yahoo.com. That's Relaford1987@yahoo.com.
Curtis, Emily, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for this opportunity, man.
Good luck. Good luck.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks for joining us.
Living a shamanic life is about more than drumming, rattling, and journeying. It's about living in harmony with the spirits and the earth. Sometimes that means caring enough to take action. If you know someone who is walking the talk and feel we should hear their message, let us know. We love to highlight activists who are doing their part to embrace our spirit-filled world and live a shamanic life. Contact Karen Armstrong, K-A-R-Y-N, at shamaniclife.com or John Carosella, J-C, at fireflywillows.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. Next up, Spirit Muse and Song. Our musical artist this week is Tina Malia. I encountered Tina Malia at a sound healing concert here in the Bay Area, and I have to say I was enchanted by her music. You can find Tina's music at tinamalia.com. We'll start tonight with the song Circle of Stones from Tina's album Shores of Avalon.
Feathered on, and we will rise.
that was Circle of Stones from Tina Malia's album Shores of Avalon, a work that she completed in 2000. And we are very privileged to have Tina with us tonight. Tina, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Hi, everyone.
I listened to a lot of the tracks from Shores of Avalon, and Circle of Stones just had this really deep mystery to it that I found very powerful. And, you know, your background is not Celtic.
No.
And yet this album is chock full of Celtic mystery and magic. How did you find this magic?
That's a great question. I was definitely at the time reading a lot of Celtic mysticism, and I was reading The Mists of Avalon with Marion Zimmer Bradley. That was definitely one of the ways. And another thing was musically, I had been playing guitar and I'd learned guitar in standard tuning, and I had gone over to Hawaii, and kind of for the first time I had heard somebody playing guitar in an open tuning.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this open tuning and it just had this real sort of a Celtic sound to it, and I was totally entranced. I'll never forget this moment on the top of this hillside overlooking the ocean, hearing the open tuning for the first time, and I was totally hooked. And I pretty much primarily write most of my music in open tuning, and I think that naturally kind of has particularly certain open tunings have a real Celtic sound and a Celtic feel to them.
Yeah, well, it sounds like the lyre or the harp or something. It sounds very fairy, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so cool. So that was in Hawaii when you discovered your Celtic muse.
Yeah, just to make it a little more confusing.
Well, I just want to touch a little bit more on your background and your heritage. Your mom was a Korean classic pianist.
Correct.
And your dad was an electrical engineer from Yugoslavia?
Wow, you've done your homework very close. My dad's parents were actually his father was from Yugoslavia, his mother was from Czechoslovakia, from Prague. And they came over here and were peach farmers. And they had my dad in the States, and then my dad became an electrical engineer. And yeah, he met my mom, who was a classical pianist who'd come over here from South Korea.
So most of us can imagine what the influence of your mom's classical piano training would have on you. And I think you've shared before that she worked you pretty hard, did she?
She definitely worked me very, very hard, as many Korean mothers are known to do. But, you know, what I always say is the thing about it is having that kind of an education is that she started training me from so young. I mean, I was like 3 or 4 years old. So I didn't even realize I had an option to do anything else until was like 12 or 13. And by then, all of it was already instilled in me, you know? I mean, yeah. I never did that kind of intensive training again like I did when I was a child.
Well, when it's presented as natural law, like the inescapable nature of things, then you kind of absorb it in a different way, I think.
Well, you do, and I mean, it's so beautiful. It's music, you know? So the discipline part of it, I mean, that's intense, and but like I said, yeah, like we've been talking about, when you're not given an option, like this is what you do from 2 to 7 p.m. every day, you know, you can really get into the beauty of the artistry because it's so beautiful. So it's not like this job. I mean, it becomes something that you actually look forward to. Also, my mom was a teacher, so all day long, every single day, we always had students there and piano.
Yeah.
And
so
it was just my whole life.
So you were just immersed in the whole thing.
Totally immersed. Yeah.
Yeah. But I want to talk a little bit about your dad. I wonder if he had from his side of the family, you inherited a folk appreciation for the diversity and intimacy of folk music.
Yeah, definitely. My dad, I think, has a natural appreciation for other kinds of music, though he also listened primarily to classical music.
It
was really, and he definitely supported my sort of venture into folk in a way that my mom didn't really.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was going to be the case.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, big time.
And his engineering background, do you think that you inherited from him or absorbed from him an appreciation of the mathematical beauty of things?
I mean,
are you a math kid or not?
I was a math kid, but, you know, I was also an only child. And my parents were amazing, amazing parents. I mean, and they really were able to educate me themselves. So my mother was teaching me piano and my father was teaching me math and reading and writing and everything really, really young. And he made it really fun. He made it like a game for me. Mm. A game. It was a special game that we did every day after he came home from work. So I started off with this real love of math. And it definitely translated. And, of course, music is completely mathematical. I mean,
yeah.
So it's it all kind of worked hand in hand.
Yeah. Okay. The thing I was poking on with your dad there a little bit with the folk music was the diversity, your world music experience. You've been all over the place and absorbed a lot of different musical styles and, you know, influences from different cultures. How did that happen and why?
That's a really great question. I think it was somewhat of an accident. I've just always really, really loved music, different kinds of music, different styles of music, and devotional music. I mean, there are so few styles of music that I haven't really gotten very deep into. I mean, I just really love and appreciate the beauty of, it's all art, you know, it's just, they're just like different paintings for me. So as far as world music, you know, I really love acoustic instruments. Mm. And I just, all these different kinds of instruments, the sarangi from India, you know, like dulcimers from Celtic music, the kora, the African harp is also one of my favorite sounds. And so I just love all these different soundscapes so much. And I actually started off in the University of Colorado as a classical voice major, you know, and I was really excited about studying world music. And I just remember my music history class in my first semester, and they spent like one day on all of the world music cultures. And I was like, one day? Really? That's all I'm going to get? One day? That's
drag.
It?
Yeah, that's not fair.
Not what I want to learn right now. So I just kind of set out on my own adventure and barking and listening, and really just listening, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think a lost art in much of today's world, just listening.
Agreed. Well said.
So I want to talk a little bit about your muse. You know, this segment is called Spirit, Muse, and Song. And it always fascinates me to hear other people share about how their muse works. Like, do you have a formal relationship with your muse where you meet him or her or it at some spiritual place? Or is your muse always riding shotgun with you, you know, wherever you go? Or what's that like for you? Your inspirations come from different places. With all this diversity, you must be like a kid in a candy store.
I think my ultimate muse always comes from the same place. And I just happen to be in different locations
right, okay.
when it happens.
Yeah, sure.
And, but, you know, sometimes it's, I really love that you give the muse like this real character, like it's this person riding in my car.
You never
because
know.
Because it's kind of like that sometimes. you know, I have a really interesting process and it's evolved and changed over the years, but, you know, sometimes I'll be just sitting casually and all of a sudden I will just hear this melody in my head and I'll have to run home and try to figure it out and catch it. It's a really a lot of catching. It really is, because it comes in and out. Sometimes I'll dream a whole song. I'll write an entire song in a dream and it'll blow my mind, you know, and I wake up like just doing everything I can just to try to stay in that space and remember it. And that comes, a lot of it is just like catching this muse and trying to put it down in some earthly form, because it will just keep going.
I love that. I love that. Catching your muse because she's always on the run. So you actually have come to this, I guess, accommodation with your muse that when it's speaking, you take the time to write it down.
Not always. But, you know, and, no, I'll say the iPhone, you know, voice memo has become very convenient for me. I know myself well enough now that I'm like, I actually won't remember that. So
yeah.
I need to, if it's moving me enough right now that I really want to remember this, and then I will record it and you know.
Yeah,
kind of goes like that.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, you know, the creative process is unique for everyone. Your latest album, The Lost Frontier, you've entered the space of some, we'll say darker material. It's not really dark, but it's not all sweetness and light. Was that a conscious choice on your part, or did your muse bring you there?
That's a great question. I would definitely say it was both. It was, I felt like I was going into this darker place. And I don't, when I say darker, I don't necessarily mean like sad and depressed dark, just deeper, just that dark, the moon, that place, you know?
Yeah, the shadows.
The shadow, it's opposite the light. And I just was starting to see and realize the importance of it. And then I had, particularly with my music and just being so young and free and, you know, hadn't really delved into that. And I just felt life kind of naturally bringing me there. And it was interesting. So it was conscious. And I was also aware that, you know, I had been doing this music that was so focused on the light and devotion. And I was a bit, you know, weary of my fan base, of people just that come to me for that, you know.
Yeah, they come to you for therapy, right? I mean, were you nervous that they would be like, "Ooh, I don't want to listen to this stuff"?
You know, yes and no. I mean, in the end of the day, I'm an artist, and I have to be allowed to be an artist, and that was really what I came to.
Yes.
I was just like, I have to do this for myself,
awesome.
Everyone, and
yes.
I promise I will always. And the thing is, it's like you said. I touch on some subjects. I touch on some darkness, even through the palette of music that I create. But in the end of the day, every single song is still about holding the light. That's what the whole thing is.
Yeah.
Everyone. It just never changes. That's just how I am. I don't mean to write that way. There's times where I've wished I could be like maybe more angsty or something, and maybe I could be more hip, or I don't know. But it just doesn't come out of me, and I've accepted that after all this time. But I wanted to be able to create and to go to some of those intimate and darker places of just being human too, you know?
Yeah,
and there was also this feeling of like doing all this devotional music and really spiritual music, people start to put you on this pedestal. And I felt like I wanted to show people, look, I'm so totally just as human as you are. And here, I'm going to show you some of my darkness too and my shadow and let's just be there together, you know?
Mm.
And I needed to, I don't know, I felt like I wanted to knock myself off this pedestal. And because I felt in a way like it was also sort of containing me in this strange sort of way that like I wanted to have a larger artistic expression. So I feel like I just confessed to you all of that. I don't think I've said any of that out loud to anybody yet.
Well, I think it's honest, you know. I think, you know, it's authentic when you are doing the kind of work that you're doing and trying to be in touch with your muse and trying to give your spirit its way to express. You got to allow yourself to be the full human that you are. So that's how it goes. Before we wrap and head into the song that I want to exit with, I just want to talk to you a little bit about the role of beauty in your walk. I've listened to some of the other conversations that you've had, and it strikes me that beauty is a very important aspect of your spiritual path. Would you care to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I love to use the word beauty because for me it's a really universal term. And I feel that when you see something or hear something of true beauty, it brings you back to this place of joy and even of stillness. And I feel like a place that, you know, so many different religions and spiritual walks ultimately are trying to bring us to. And we all have, there's different names
right.
for it and different
right.
methods, but it's just coming to this place of like, oh yeah, this is why I love being alive, you know, for whatever that is. And I feel whether it's beauty through music or through nature or through a beautiful meal that gets created when there's a care and consciousness put into its creation of art. I just feel life is all art, you know, and if you can look at it from that perspective, it's just becomes much more enjoyable and so much easier to come out of this constraints of the mind that we get ourselves in, especially with so much pain and suffering that we see and that, you know, we focus on in our lives.
Yeah, that constructed reality is of the mind, and when you encounter beauty or cultivate beauty in the world, it is arresting, as you say. It can stop you. It can bring you to stillness, and then you see the world in a different way, right?
Yeah. I think that it can. It just helps bring things back to a place of gratitude. It's so much easier to exist in this world if you feel gratitude, and that line is always there. It's so easy to get caught for all of us, you know, on difficult parts or things that we think are difficult. But when you're just really grateful for what you have and where you are, it's a lot. I just find it a lot easier to get through life in a great way. So yeah, I find, and I just feel like beauty just really describes, you know, I like to keep things as universal as I can because I have studied a lot of different religions and a lot of different paths. And I, with my music, love to keep it really universal, not only for myself, but for other people too, because I just feel like it keeps it really open. So beauty is just this way of, how I connect to the word of the divine, really, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's a really important lens through which to view one's spiritual walk, because beauty is this universal thing that can be discovered everywhere. And if the divine is everywhere, you know, and beauty is everywhere, you might as well look for beauty to find the divine, because that's like no filters, nobody else's opinion, right? It's right there in front of you. It's like the sound of a divine note being sung or plucked right in your presence. So I want to leave our audience with the song from The Lost Frontier called Warrior. Can you share a little bit about this song?
Yeah, this is probably the deepest song for me on this album. This was, as far as talking about the darkness, like you said, this one probably brought me there the most. And I saw a lot of visions as I was writing this album. And a lot of the album has this sense of war going through it. And so Warrior is really about this soldier going off to war and the mother really calling to him. And so it was a really sad song, but it's also a really beautiful song. And it was her praying and her saying, you know, sing for the bells of peace to ring. And that was the overarching, even though through this sadness, she was still praying and singing for peace. So that's what that song is about.
Well, I think we can all sympathize with that and are rewarded when we invest ourselves in that singing for the bells of peace. That's good. So, Tina, thank you so much for joining us on Spirit, Muse, and Song. Wish you the very best. Are you going to be performing somewhere or soon, or are you touring with the new album? What's going on there?
I'm performing a lot. Yeah, I'm performing pretty much every month, at least a couple times. You can just check my site. I'm mostly on the West Coast, but I get near the East and out to Hawaii, and yeah.
Okay, tinamalia.com is where we want to send folks, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, and so on our way out, we'll be listening to the track Warrior from Tina's newest album, The Lost Frontier. Thanks, Tina.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Caracella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows LIVE for Evolve with Robin White Turtle Lisney, Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m.